Welcome to Coming Up for Air, the Allies in Recovery podcast, with hosts Laurie McDougall, Kayla Solomon, and Dominique Simone Levine.
Okay, ladies, so today's discussion, we are talking about enmeshment. Kayla, can you clear it up? What do we mean by enmeshment?
I guess if you think about people having a self and boundaries, what happens with enmeshment is when boundaries get vague and mushy, and it's hard to tell where you start and the other person starts. So it's almost like you become a blended being where how the other person feels affects you intensely. You planning and strategizing and thinking about how you're going to avoid bad things from happening to this person. You trying to predict the future. Basically, it's this kind of you and this other person become so blended that it's hard to differentiate. But the interesting thing is it's not necessarily two ways. It's that often if your loved one is dealing with substance abuse issues or mental health issues or even just generically bad behavior, they're not thinking about you. So the enmeshment is not about them coming towards you. It's more about you, like so many of your thoughts, so many of your feelings, so many of your choices is really about what's happening with them.
Yeah, it's about how you're going to affect them, right? And I'm just coming from that family perspective. It's every step and every move that I make is based on what is the outcome of my loved one? Like what impact will it have on my loved one? And it's not even just the impact that it'll have on my loved one, but how can I manage to control that outcome? Because the outcome is what, and I know this is going to sound crazy, it is a self-soothing kind of technique, because it's not only about helping the other person, it's very much about soothing myself, soothing me.
And not just soothing me, but protecting me. I need this person to have this outcome, otherwise it comes back on me in so many horrible, treacherous ways. Money, I get put out, I get stood up, I get, you know, so it's not altruistic. Enmeshment is not altruistic. Both people are gaining from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Both people are gaining from it, even if you're not aware of it, because I think that we often can become so enmeshed in the chaos that it's just so chaotic in our own minds that we don't even understand what's happening. All we know is what we feel. Like, I feel frantic in the moment. I feel horrible. I'm scared. I have anxiety, and I need to find some way to calm that down. And the only way I can get that to calm down is if this person does this particular thing, or if I'm able to stop them, or if I'm able to get them to do something in particular. And that's why I think we become enmeshed on top of other things. Because I also think, especially in a parenting role, and I don't care if your kid is a toddler, a teenager, or they're 40 or 50, but in a parenting role, society tells us that's what we have to do. That's what we should be doing. And so when someone turns 18, and I'm putting the 18 in air quotes, this idea of just, well, now they're adults and now I'm not involved, right? Like, now I've got to step back. How do you do that after years of being enmeshed and believing society tells you that's your role? That's what you should be doing. I'm sure it's very different for romantic relationships or partner relationships. Although, if everybody could see both Kayla and Dominique making faces at me right now, because although it's very easy in those roles to also fall into parental roles and become overly enmeshed, which I often believe it has a lot to do with wanting to be loved and wanting this person to love you the way you want them to love you. And so it's always out there trying to get them to love you in that way, as well as maybe falling into a bit more of a parental role when it comes to especially substance use disorder. I do think this happens with other chronic illnesses as well.
As you're talking, I'm thinking one of the criteria, I guess, for enmeshment is that it's an imbalance. There's something not balanced about this. Because the interesting thing about the word enmeshment is it sounds like it's mutual, and it's not mutual. One person has more responsibility than the other. And this absolutely happens with partners. If your partner has a history of substance use, there's a very, very good chance that you've taken steps to like manage and control and try to make sure the outcome is okay. And you're watching them to see if they're okay. And you're worrying about them. And I agree with you, Lori. I think that that's a very parental role that partners get into. And I also really feel like we do it for two purposes. Just to summarize what you're saying, one is prevention and protection of this person that you feel is vulnerable and making terrible decisions. And you feel like all you're doing is trying to be the rational one in this situation, because they apparently aren't. And then this other part is, if this can work out, then I will get my needs met. Whether it's not to worry, whether it's that things get calmed down and safer, or they step in and are more, take their power and take care of things so that you're not doing as much. So it's this like wrapping yourself in with this other person in the hopes that something good is going to happen. The word that we're not using today, which is fascinating, is enabling, which is to me a horrifying word, because I feel like it's this assumption that you're doing this activity intentionally to make something terrible. And what I believe is all of these dynamics are about you're really trying to operate in the service of taking care of this person or the situation. And it just is not working. It's not balanced. It's not helpful. And it ultimately doesn't have good outcomes when you're coming from that place.
And you have huge skin in the game, whether if it's your child, it's the disasters that they can have in school and with the criminal justice system and everything else. And if you're a partner, you're not going to get loved. You're not going to get your needs met. And why else are you in this? So you can see the dilemma of staying or going and why people just walk away. I mean, of course, it's easier perhaps if you're a partner to walk away, but I see parents walking away too. And for every parent that's in here trying to figure out the nuances of how you're going to say this and that when they come home high or not, you know, there's another parent out there that is just shut down, cut off, and unwilling to step in and reward and be the influence that they can be. So it's not the opposite of enmeshment to me. It's the extreme of the response to enmeshment, which is just to step completely away and shut your ears and eyes off to it all.
And I think there's one element in here that we don't talk enough about, and that is intense love. It's this intense love for that other person. Otherwise, people wouldn't be there, right? Like they wouldn't be involved, or even those family members, you know, parents maybe that step away and that whole hit rock bottom thing. I also think, one, you can't tell me that doing that isn't traumatizing to those families, because it is. That also has incredibly difficult and challenging emotions mixed up in that, and family members often get traumatized by doing that. So really, family members often feel incredibly trapped. You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. And you hear this all over the place, because really, society, the community in general, are telling family members everything that they do is wrong. Everything that they do is wrong. If you kick them out and cut them out of your life, you're wrong. If you're giving them a roof over their head and paying for their food, it's wrong, right? Like everything is wrong, wrong, wrong. And nobody is telling people what you can do. And I don't want to say it's right, but how can you stay connected and still be effective and not be as enmeshed? Not be. And I think that craft in Allies in Recovery, it's a difficult process. It's a commitment, but it's more than possible to stay together and to start being effective and to start work on this untangling of enmeshment to try and change things and make the force for more positive outcomes. Although I don't know, how do we get started with that?
What is the first step to looking at, if you feel like we've been saying, you feel overly dependent or enmeshed with your loved one and they have addiction and that's why you're on this site, what's the first thing to do?
My personal belief in all of the work that we do is that you have to look at yourself. That part of enmeshment is that your view is always external. If this happens, I will be okay. If I do this, this won't happen. I'm going to show my love in this way. And then if they can feel my love, then they're going to be better. And so you have to go back to an internal focus, which I think is really, really hard to do. So I just want to be clear about that. I think it's hard under the best of circumstances. But when you're dealing with constant crisis, it feels impossible. And I think that sometimes when it is a full-blown crisis, like if your family is having a medical emergency or something like that, it's going to be different than when things calm down a little bit. So you want to really look at the moments of calmer to start to do this. And there are moments of calmer, no matter how dysfunctional that person might be. So you start by thinking, what do I want? What do I need? How am I feeling at this moment? What's the right thing for me to do for myself? So self-care. And when we talk about self-care, it's a vast number of possibilities. But I actually think it has to start out with, what do I want? What do I need right this moment? That's the beginning. And I think that when I work with people all the time, a lot of the time, that question is the hardest thing for people to answer because they've been so externally focused that it doesn't even seem like what I want is that person to be okay. What I need is for them to be safe. No. That's not the answer. It's like, I need to take a breath. I need to ground myself. I need to go to get some space and take a walk. I need to have a conversation with a safe person to dump this stuff out. I need to go to therapy.
I agree with you, Kayla. And I've been saying this recently to a lot of people. The key to pulling craft off in learning these skills and these strategies is learning how to regulate your own emotions. And I think that's what you're talking about. And for me, this is how I approach it. When I'm getting emotionally deregulated, I stop myself in the moment and I ask myself, how do I want to present in this situation? Do I want to be hurtful or helpful? If I want to be hurtful, then go ahead, start yelling, start screaming, start pacing, do whatever. Or do I want to be helpful? Because those things are not helpful. Okay, I have to go and I have to calm it down. I have to calm the system down. For me, I can't think in the moments when my system is deregulated. I cannot do it. And what I started to notice when I first started doing this was that, my mind was like a tornado in there. And I'm like, what's wrong with me? I can't figure this out. I can't figure this out. But I found that as long as I gave myself enough time, It was amazing. My mind would just settle. And it was like, of course you can figure this out. You know the skills. You can do this. So I agree 100% with Kayla. Most difficult thing in the world to do, but it's key, is to press that pause button. Ask yourself, do you want to be hurtful? Do you want to be helpful? If you want to be hurtful, yep, go ahead. Lose it. If you want to be helpful, calm the system down, wait, pause. And also, I want people to understand too, this thing about self-care. And this is why you hear that all the time. Don't forget to take care of yourself. Don't forget to take care of yourself. I think it's really important to be specific when we're talking about self-care. Self-care doesn't mean going and taking a bubble bath, although it might. But most of the time, self-care is about emotionally regulating yourself. It's about taking that pause button. It's not comfortable to do. So it might not feel like self-care, but it actually is. And self-care can be pretty darn basic. It can be something as simple as, did you eat? Are you hungry? Did you get enough sleep? Have you been outside today and gone for a walk and taken a few deep breaths just to get some fresh air into your body? It's literally that basic. And then it can be even more than that. It can be taking that bubble bath and watching the sunset and all of that. Absolutely, we want you to do that, but it's in the moment, you know, in this turbulent, crazy moment, stop, regulate. And that is the beginning of ending this enmeshment and starting to analyze your piece in everything starts to separate what your role is from the individual that you're interacting with.
And because with craft, we're helping you tease apart these very patterned events, right? This is something you've seen before. You've been angry before. You can let it rip, as Lori says, or you can try something different. All we're asking you to do is to predict that it's going to happen again, and that the first thing you're going to do is grab hold of yourself, pause. And it's actually, I think, you get to a certain blood pressure and your brain can no longer function. I mean, there's some science to that, you know, so you've got to get everything down. But then you need, since you know pretty much how it's going to go down, you need to make a small plan. Even what one step are you going to do in here when this all starts again that is not going to be like you usually respond? And what could it be? Could it be you're not going to be sarcastic? You're not going to throw dinner down on the table? You're not. Maybe it's just your plan is to greet the person for 5 minutes, say nothing bad out of your mouth for 5 whole minutes, don't react, just say goodnight. Can you do that? Can you do that 5 minute span without it all going the way it usually does? And that would be the entirety of craft for right now, finding that pause, getting in and out without escalation. And you know your person best. And if you really start to think about how you can do this differently, you're opening up options you might have forgotten you had.
There's another part of this, which is the stories we tell ourselves. So if you're in a story, you cannot have a good reaction because the story is running the show. So the pause allows you to step back and get out of the story because the story is like, blah, 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 blah. This is what I should do. This is what's going on. I need to look for this. I need to do this, blah, blah, blah. The story is the racing part that we do. And so if you say, oh, I'm telling a story right now, because that's part of it, is you need to kind of see yourself in action. And I think even before what we're doing is that we're asking you to do is increase your self-awareness. So you need to start watching yourself like, oh my God, I'm very jacked up right now. That's my terminology. I need to not say a word because from jacked up place, I only say angry, sarcastic things, or my mouth just keeps talking when it shouldn't. So jacked up person needs to like go and not be around people or have tape on my mouth. Then there's this kind of self-talk thing that is also necessary where you're talking yourself down off the ledge. You're soothing yourself with the words in your head of like, okay, right now I'm not going to do anything. It's okay. And I tell the story all the time that there was one time that I picked up my car and there was no gas in it. And I spent the whole day being furious at my partner for not putting gas in the car. And I was enraged the entire day. I walked into my house and thank God there's a staircase. And I thought to myself, I'm going to just like blow up right now. I'm planning it the whole day. Like, how could you do this to me? I can't believe you don't care about me. And I walked up the stairs and I thought, my role model is my dad. I don't know if anybody else has this kind of dad. He would walk in after work and just explode. We had no idea what was bothering him, but that's how he would communicate. He'd come in, explode. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to be my dad. So I basically, he's my role model. It's like, I think, what would he do? And I do the opposite. So he's been very helpful in my life. And I stopped and I was like, okay, so what's the opposite? So I walked up the stairs. Thank God I have stairs. Opened the door and I said, hi, how was your day? And it was the absolute opposite of what I felt, but it calmed my system down, had a lovely meal. After dinner, we sat down and I said, oh, by the way, there was no gas in the car. And I'm just wondering, you know, what was going on? And she's like, oh my God, I know. I thought I was going to be picking up the car. And in the meantime, you picked it up. I was going to fill the car up with gas. I'm like, what would have happened if I went on my story? And I feel like we do this all the time, because the other part of enmeshment is we think our story is the truth and we do not allow space for the other person's story. We don't ask. We're not interested. We're not curious. So another part of detangling is being interested in what that other person thinks and feels and what their ideas are and giving it value and validity, as opposed to we're the people that know everything and are always right and this other person is incompetent.
And I also think, piggybacking on what both Kayla and Dominique have said, it's really important to narrow it down. If you notice in Kayla's story, she's not talking about untangling the enmeshment in a way that's huge and big, right? She's narrowing it down to some tiny little step. Wait a minute, I'm just not going to walk through the door and blow up. Just one little different change. It isn't this big. You cannot use substances, period, when you're in my house, you know, like, uh-oh, that's a big, difficult thing to manage. Let's start small. Let's start with something very, very small and work from there to untangle and undo all of this enmeshment. And remembering that we're not talking about untangling and not being a part of each other's lives. We're talking about untangling. I have a picture of like a whole bunch of thread, like all tangled up in my head, and just untangling it. And when it's untangled, it's two pieces of thread lined up next to one another. In other words, now we're walking side by side. We're not doing this dance with one another. We're just here together. And certainly I'm going to influence you. You're going to influence me, but it's done with like mutual respect and understanding. And yeah, every once in a while, the threads cross and that entanglement happens again. And I've got to untangle it. I've got to find that knot in there and I've got to untangle it again. But that's what I have pictured in my head. And I often talk, I talk about it a little bit different than Kayla does. And I say this to myself when things are happening and I'm getting ready to respond in a really negative way. I tell myself, oh, these are your preconceived ideas and beliefs about this situation, and you're letting them take control of you. And you've got to rethink this. Give yourself the space and time to rethink it.
What I love about craft is that it doesn't take much to get a big wow kind of reaction back. So either, you know, I was able to stay quiet for 5 minutes, or Kayla was able to not blow up at the top of the stairs. Well, it would have started at the bottom and then probably gotten louder as she went up. And that isn't huge, but it's so significant to the other person that you are already doing craft. You are feeling that little dynamic change. And the other thing is that you want to pull away with this enmeshment, but you do have a very specific role to play in the craft world, right? Your role is, in essence, I hate to say it this way because I don't believe it's true, but necessarily you are the healthier one of the two. You are trying to influence and manage a situation where somebody is not well, and you're trying to get them into care, trying to get them into recovery, trying to get them into a better place, right? So we are not without our motives here. And so you do have a role, which is the role of partnering with them, of listening to them, of being compassionate, holding on to yourself. And it's not fair. You should be allowed to start screaming once in a while if you want, but he does it all the time. Well, I know it's not fair, but you're not going to. And that's all we're asking, is you're going to have to be the more responsible, the more compassionate, the more giving, obviously the more strategic and thinking and thoughtful person, and the one willing to learn. So we're asking a lot out of you, but we guarantee you'll see these little shifts and how they shift your loved one, and you will be so encouraged.
And also you'll be shifting yourself, because what we're talking about is being healthier. The irony of this is, I didn't realize when I first started working with Craft and Allies that, wow, if you actually do this, the person who's doing the work is actually improving their lives and getting healthier. But that's the outcome, because it's kind of like with our listening and the communication skills that we teach. part of listening really deeply is not absorbing painful things, but learning how do you protect yourself when you're listening and somebody's sending you painful messages, to be able to have protection up, to be able to not be a sponge, to be able to not take it personally. Am I saying this is easy? No, but that's the goal for this, is that when you start practicing things and get better at it, you can hear that this person's throwing stuff at you, but you don't have to be a pincushion for it. You get to hear it as their stuff, their feelings, their issues, whatever. And that's the respectful distance that they need. Because if they're paining you every time they do something, their behavior then becomes about you and not about them. And you want their behavior to be about them and not you, not hurting you, not protecting you, because they're doing the same thing that you've been doing, which is you're trying to prevent and protect and be in their business so that their life is okay. And they're trying not to hurt you. They're trying to hurt you, whatever. So it's like, how do you take it apart so that their behavior is about them, your behavior is about you, but your behavior towards them is positive and encouraging and helpful. And also, when they're not being in a good place, you get to respectfully step back and not make a big deal out of it and not make a mess, but just quietly step back so that they get to have their experience without it being about you. That's part of what works about the stepping back, is then it's about them and they could see it because they're trying to elicit a reaction from you. And if they don't, then it becomes clear to them that it's on them. And that's unbelievably powerful in terms of changing somebody's behavior.
And I will say this, one, doing this, when you start to calm down and you start to think about it, like when I started to think, do I want to be hurtful or helpful? I want to be helpful. Then basically what I'm saying is, I want to be the healthier person, regardless of whether this other person is healthy or not, regardless of their actions and their response. It literally is, what do I want to present in this moment? And that makes me less of a victim. And it helped me to realize that this is not being done to me. This is being done because my loved one is struggling with something right now. Yeah, they're trying to pull me into it, and I will be the victim if I let it happen. But once I realize that it actually isn't being done to me, it's now my responsibility not to take it on, not to take it personally. And by doing that, the other thing that I found is, this is now the first time that my loved one has to be accountable for their own behavior. Everybody talks about, I believe people have to be accountable and they have to be responsible for their own stuff. Well, if you're the one managing it all the time, they're not ever going to be accountable or responsible. So when you step away and you let them be accountable, they're not going to like it in the beginning. They're not going to like it. And this is why there's a lot more, like, it gets heightened. It gets worse in the beginning before it gets better. But this is it. This is it. Okay, well, let them deal with their own challenging feelings, right? You're still there. You're still a part of it. You're just not the one taking it on and trying to manage it and control it. And this is how everybody gets healthier, which is amazing.
Yeah. And the one thing I would add for partners, because it gets complicated with partners, it gets complicated when your life is enmeshed with this other person. Are they working and bringing in money? Are they doing things around the house? Are they actually acting in partnership with you? Are they doing enough? And we talked about this in the group this week. It gets really messy because it's like, what are you allowed to ask of somebody who's vulnerable? If somebody who's struggling, there's this fear that if I want too much or ask too much, they're going to relapse or they're going to do something terrible. So I just want to acknowledge that because it's complicated. But what the craft work is about is, you do get to have requests of this person. You want to do it in a way where it's not a demand. It's not where you're nagging all the time. It's not where you're just, you know, repeating yourself 1,000 times. This is where having really healthy communication comes in, where you get to talk about yourself, because it's not, you said you were going to do that and you didn't do it. It's more like, I just want you to know that it really affects me when you tell me that you're going to pay this bill and you don't. I feel like you're expecting me to do everything. And I just want to make sure that that's not what you're thinking. So can you tell me what you're thinking about this? What are you hoping is going to happen with this? What's your expectation of yourself in terms of paying the bills? So you start this communication. And then once you ask that question, step back and let the person speak without interrupting them. Keep mirroring them and asking for more information. Okay, so, you know, you didn't make enough money this week. Can you tell me more about that? And then let them keep talking, because what happens is we get into this dynamic of like one person is speaking and the other person is effectively silenced and they don't even know what they're thinking. But if you step back and mirror them and let them talk, they will get clearer about what's going on with them. And that's another major shift that needs to happen in this.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I also think that similar things happen in the parental role, even with like adult children. Like maybe someone comes home, or maybe they're set up in an apartment, and parents often feel like they need to make life very easy for their loved one so that they can focus only on their recovery and not have to worry about anything else but their recovery. And it's much easier to tell people in a partnership that, no, it's okay for you to start asking for your needs to be met. That's the kind of relationship that you have. And it's much harder to tell parents that, well, no, you have needs in this relationship, and it's okay for you to start asking your loved one to step up. And again, you can do it in small little pieces. I call it weaning off of you, but you can do it in small little pieces where, okay, well, we'll pay your rent for such and such amount of time. We need you to pay for, I don't know, your gas and electricity. And then we want to give you the heads up that we're slowly going to be reducing the amount that we can cover for the rent. And you can do it in small little steps to kind of also kind of let your loved one know you actually do have needs. Even if you're in a parental role, you have needs as a interactive human being with your loved one that need to be met by this person. And I believe it's true in partnerships. I also believe it's true in all of our relationships, really, even friendships. We all have needs. That's what it's all about, is give and take.
So I guess it's time for us to finish. So let's do the wrap here. So today's topic was enmeshment, which is when the boundaries are mushy between you and another person. And it feels like, as I like to say, and I didn't say this before, but that you're living in somebody else's underwear. So I will go a little rogue on this one. But if you're in somebody else's underwear, you're in the wrong place. Okay. They need to be in their own underwear. And nobody likes that kind of invasion of privacy, so to speak. And so your job is to step back into your own underwear and let the person step into theirs. And we do that by checking in with ourselves, by calming our systems down, by taking pauses, by allowing the other person the dignity of their own process, by trying to focus more on yourself and less on the other person. And then really getting the skills and the tools to have a healthy relationship with this person, so that you're listening and you're making requests, but that are reasonable, and you're not nagging them about the requests. And also that they have their own process that you need to respect, whether you like it or not. And basically, you're going to stay engaged, you're going to stay connected, but not overly involved in their activities, behaviors, or decisions, because you're going to be focusing on your own.
Thanks for listening. We hope this episode of Coming Up for Air spoke to you. If you're listening in today on a podcast platform that isn't the Allies member site, please take a moment to give us a 5-star rating. This helps others find the show more easily. If you have a suggestion for a new topic or a guest for the show, please reach out through the Contact Us form on alliesinrecovery.net. Special thanks to our hosts, our guests, and our production team.